Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
And now, sit back and relax as Radio Netherlands Media Network takes you on a summer safari. Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks report from the west coast of the United States. Let's bring up the satellite link to Silicon Valley.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. I've been down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city.
Yes, we made it.
And without too much jet lag.
You know, it's strange. The guidebooks tell you not to bother. Silicon Valley doesn't really exist, they explain. It's simply a name dreamed up by a journalist in the 1970s. Stanford University sold some of its land to high-tech companies, which did much better than anyone imagined. Now the area directly south of San Francisco is just a cluster of high-tech concrete buildings along Highway 101. Don't look for bus tours of Silicon Valley. The community is secretive, and they don't want tourists poking around.
Well, that's what they say. Well, yes, if you're into T-shirts and collecting fridge magnets, then Fisherman's Wharf at the northern end of San Francisco is probably nirvana. A boat trip to Alcatraz, a walk across the Golden Gate Bridge, and a ride on a cable car are the touristy things you just have to do. Well, at least once.
On a Monday afternoon, we hired a car and headed south along Highway 101. It was a bit like leafing through the advertising section of a computing magazine, except that here, the color logos were pinned to giant office buildings on either side of the road, gleaming in the summer sun. The fog and mist, which engulfs the city of San Francisco for much of the year, doesn't reach this far.
It's difficult to miss the energy radiating from Silicon Valley. It's an area of success, judging by the number of Porsches, BMWs and Ferraris that overtake on the inside lane. The local newspaper is crammed with job advertisements. Those firms that don't make the grade are quickly swept under the carpet of success.
And if you don't have an appointment, indeed, the door to most companies is firmly shut. But if your interest is genuine, the welcome is warm and friendly. In Europe, job and academic titles are often important, especially in the German-speaking parts of the continent. You make an appointment with Professor this or Doctor that. In Silicon Valley, the secretary buzzes upstairs to the president's office that guests Jonathan and Diana are here on a visit.
In order to best plan our Silicon Valley safari, we enlisted the help of Spencer Rees. He's features editor for Wired magazine, one of the leading monthly publications that follows the trends in computing, concentrating on content rather than just the latest developments in microprocessors.
You need to cut through pages of hype to find out what's really going on. It doesn't take much money to build a prototype of a device, write an alpha version of a piece of software, and launch your idea in a blaze of publicity.
A few well-placed emails will ensure your idea reaches the top 50 companies in the US. All this before you've really got any financial backing to make the device you've promised everyone.
Pick up any computing magazine from 5 years ago and you'll see that more than half of the companies are no longer trading, at least in the same way that they were. Lifetime guarantees last as long as the lifetime of the company.
Spencer Rees explains that some concepts, though, are here to stay. Internet radio, for instance. The World Wide Web is rather like the movie industry was in the 1920s. With 1,500 radio stations on the World Wide Web at the moment, just in North America, that's half of the global total, the Internet is just learning to talk. And unlike compact disc interactive or photo CDs, webcasting is not a passing fad.
It all depends. I mean, there's technologies that fail and there's technologies that are ahead of the time. And I think that we've seen a number of technologies ahead of their time which will probably reappear. There's a legitimate question about whether they'll reappear in exactly the same form particular technological form that they came out the first time, but that there will be something like internet radio casting, I think, is beyond question at this point. I mean, as you mentioned, there's 1,500 stations. It's great. You or I right now could sit down with nothing more than a microphone and a telephone line and start a global radio station that could be that could reach any person on the planet with access to a telephone, whether by landline, satellite, or any other way. That's extraordinary.
But are you actually broadcasting as such? I mean, you're squirting the stuff into the internet, but only on demand.
Yeah, we've gone around the definition of broadcasting here a number of times. We want, you know, the original definition is putting something out in the air so that anybody in range of that transmission can reach it. I think we may have to think about an alternative definition, which is where you put something out into play and anybody who wants to can pull it down. I mean, if you can reach a million people around the world by the internet with your little radio station, aren't you just as much a broadcaster as somebody who reaches a million people in a metropolitan area by putting it on a radio tower? I think so.
But won't that have an impact on content? I mean, if you're a radio station here in San Francisco, you know who your audience is, and you can target it quite easily. But what if every radio station is an international station?
There's the positive spin on that, and there's the negative spin. The positive spin is that, let's say you wanted to have a radio station devoted exclusively to Haitian music, okay? Now, in any country or city in the world, you might have trouble coming up with enough people to justify that. But if you were broadcasting around the whole world, where every person on the planet that was interested could get together, you might indeed find yourself with several hundred thousand people willing to listen. Now, that's the plus side. The downside is advertisers don't like it. Advertisers want you to be in a single location where they can put grocery ads or shoe ads or whatever. And when you come along with a dispersed global medium, unless they're a dispersed global company like, let's say, Dunhill Cigarettes maybe, that is willing to, but even there, you know, it's a reach. It's a new thing for advertisers. And so I think a lot of these ventures, the best that you can say for them is that it's very inexpensive. In other words, if you're running a radio station right now, say in Austin, Texas, that specializes in a particular form of progressive modern American music, the extra cost to put it on the internet is very small. It's the cost of a phone line and a bit of technical help. It really is very modest, and so you don't worry about the extra, you know, that you your advertisers aren't going to care about potential listeners in New Zealand isn't going to bother the advertisers because it's icing on the cake. But the question is, if you want to take it to the next level, if you want to be a global radio station, like, for instance, Radio Netherlands, it's, you know, it's potentially useful. I mean, look at shortwave radio. The analogy with shortwave radio is almost perfect. You know, you guys don't worry about whether advertisers in some far-flung place can hear the message or not. It's being done for particular reasons, and it's a very low-cost way to reach lots of people and to very specifically reach people who are spread all over creation and who want to hear the particular kind of thing that you have. So if you have very specialized stuff and you're willing to do it on a sort of low-budget, non-commercial basis, it's fantastic. It is revolutionary, as they say.
So internet radio is great for narrowcasting. A few thousand people at any one time can access live radio programs from a webcaster on the internet. That's tiny compared to the number reached simultaneously by a radio broadcast.
But the numbers are growing. Back in May, during the British general elections, broadcasters like the BBC watched their internet service crash as demand for information clogged the digital pipelines trying to provide it.
Yeah, I mean, or more recently, this chess match, Kasparov and Big Blue. Same. I mean, I tried to look it up the internet, and I just could not get into the damn. Now, again, that to me falls into the same category of the AOL's recent, America Online's recent problems, which is an embarrassment of riches. If your biggest problem is that you have more people, more customers, more than you can handle, you've got a much different kind of a problem than most people have, which is nothing, silence, no one listening, nobody there. And it's a technical problem. And people, you know, people are learning how to deal with large numbers on the internet. Software can help, but at the end of the day, you've got to buy machines. Now, the good news is that compared with, say, radio transmitters, those machines are pretty inexpensive. And, you know, it's a shock to people to suddenly have to scale up for a million people coming in to listen to your chess match or hit on your election site. But as a practical matter, that's the kind of problem you'd probably like to have. Last but not least, the most important thing that people have to realize anytime you're talking about commercial possibilities on the internet right now in the United States, by the wildest estimates, perhaps 20 to 25% of the people are regularly using the internet. If that, that's a high number. Network television wouldn't make sense if only 25% of the people in the United States had televisions. And in the same way, unless or until those numbers come up, it's going to remain, by definition, a niche phenomenon because only a niche of people can receive it. If the number starts to get over 50%, let alone the 80 or 90 or 100% that most, you know, developed countries have now, I think the numbers change dramatically.
Mac people got no reason. Mac people got no reason. Mac people got no reason to live. They got a little mouse and a little brain, a little kid's computer to play those silly little games. Mac people got no reason to be alive. Now that we got Windows 95, well, I don't want no Mac people. Don't need no Mac people. Don't want no Mac people around here.
Cupertino was another familiar sounding name on the map. More sprawled out than other neighborhoods in Silicon Valley, it's where you'll find the headquarters of Apple Computing.
In the mid-1980s, the entrepreneurial glow of enthusiasm converted many creative people to its superior graphic-style operating system.
But Microsoft's Windows 95 has eroded Apple's market share to a point where the suits in Cupertino are struggling to find a new direction.
Directly opposite Apple's headquarters is another, much smaller technology center. The plaque says Audio Highway at the front of the building. A secretary beamed up at us from her desk in the stairwell. Our president and CEO, Nathan Schulhoff, is available now, she said.
Audio Highway is trying to cut the wires that tie users to the internet. They're developing a device that stores audio in a flash memory module so you can carry your favorite programs around with you. Nathan's office is strewn with awards for previous successes. So, how is this latest scheme coming along?
Great. At this time, our system is up and running. We're in beta. We're testing all over the country, and we hope to be shipping into the stores in the July timeframe. And from the stores to the shelves, it should be on sale in August.
In sale in August, does that mean just in the USA or also in Europe and the rest of the world?
Just in the USA at first, although at this time we are in discussions with other service providers around the world, in every major and actually some third world nations. We find that content is really very cultural. The same content that would sell here wouldn't be the same in France or Italy or Brazil, as actually happens to be a country that we're in discussions with. So we more look for partners in other countries, ISPs generally, who want to take this technology as our partner and run with it. What we do is we have a team that for the last 3 years have been running around this country licensing content from Newsweek or Dow Jones or audiobooks or music. We get this content, whether it comes on anything from a DAT tape to a cassette tape to satellite into us, and we store it on our server, which is data-based and allows for our users to download this content.
Okay, so it's on your server. How does it get to the user at home?
Well, the user, once they register with us, they're issued a password. With this password, they can go beyond our firewall and download our proprietary software called AudioWiz. Now, AudioWiz will manage your whole system. You'll tell AudioWiz what kind of content you're looking for, maybe what your interests are, and what time you want to download it in your service provider. At that point, every day at pre-scheduled times, AudioWiz will automatically take your computer, dial into our server, download the content you want at the times you specified, so it's there waiting for you on your computer or on your Listen Up player, whichever, wherever you choose to listen.
Of course, there are other companies that allow you to download audio onto your hard disk and listen to it later. Audio Highway is so far unique in allowing you to pump your favorite programs into a small portable device that fits into your hand and weighs just 100 grams. Running on two AAA batteries, the front panel is dominated by a menu display and a speaker.
Right, and it's a pump-pop device with a half-inch speaker. Now, the sound through the speaker isn't as powerful as if you were using headphones, or it'll actually play through large speakers. Or this will actually broadcast over your car radio if you tune to four specified channels. But if you notice, you can scroll through. Here's Associated Press. Here's Newsweek magazine.
Welcome to Newsweek on Air. I'm AP Network News correspondent Warren Levinson.
And you can just zap between...
Here's a movie review.
It's Dalmatian Domination Puppy Pandemonium, whatever you want to call it.
Here's something we do with Muzak Corporation, where we highlight jazz or rock, and here's something we did on the movie Kansas City. We have weekly magazine shows.
Welcome to Jazz Inside Out, a weekly tip
sheet. You can scroll through it and jump ahead fast, or jump back. You have complete control. Now, what else is nice about this, the content comes through the back that connects to the docking station that permanently remains on your computer through a pass-through parallel port. But on the front of the Listen Up player, there's also a microphone. So at any time, I could have a thought, and I could record this into the Listen Up player, maybe while I'm driving or on the road. So this is actually an audio tool. So then when I come back, and maybe I want to send this to you in the Netherlands or to one of my other email friends, I stick it into the Listen Up player, and it can go the other way. So I can ship audio voice that can be played on a computer or another listen-up device, or I can just use it as a recorder. And play that back to me. So it's also a digital recorder.
And that's the trick, presumably, of the device, that you're actually able to bring flash memory onto the market for a reasonable price.
Exactly. And our long-term strategy is not only to this device. We plan on using our network to pagers and PDAs and anything that really connects to the computer, which pretty much is the world today.
Shuloff is being brave in launching his own compression standard. Much larger companies such as Real Audio and the Fraunhofer Institute are also active in pushing their proprietary software. Each offers the players for free on the internet, but the audio files are not interchangeable.
We use our own technology, our own compression algorithm that we have developed, and it's embedded in AudioWiz software, so you can actually decode and listen to this on your own computer and don't have to only listen to it on the device.
This little device holds about 12 MB of memory. How much audio can I download into this device?
You can download 1 hour of audio, whether it be spoken word or music.
And how long will it take me? For example, if I go through your website, I get a password from what I understand, I select what I want to listen to, how long will it take me to download, let's say, if I'm using a dial-up modem?
Well, we're under the same constraints everyone else is on the Internet, but it's coming faster every day. Over the Internet, downloading to your computer, an hour would take approximately 47 minutes. But remember, this is being done while you sleep, all automatically. Now, from the computer to the Listen Up player, we can do an hour in anywhere between 15 seconds and 3.5 minutes, depending on the environment that it's coming from.
Downloading radio programs onto the hard disk is free. If you want portability, Shulhoff's Listen Up player has a price. It's $199, including all the cables. Most of that price goes to pay for the 12 megabytes of onboard memory. So how does he pay the people who provide him with the audio programs?
For every 1 hour of audio, there's 6 minutes of audio commercials scattered through it, which we think is really a minimum, because TV gives you 18 or more, radio gives you 12 or more, where it's six. And really the fascinating part is, you know, as you use us, we get to learn about you and we can service you much better. We find out what type of content that you've been taking, and we try to give you audio commercials that really fit you as a person, maybe something that you would like to hear.
Aren't people worried, though, that you know, sort of Big Brother is watching them?
Well, if an individual or user wants to pay for the content themselves, which is $3 per hour, they can get it commercial free, or they can take the commercials and skip through it. Unfortunately, we have growing costs, and we have to pay our content providers, so there has to be a revenue base so we may sustain ourselves. Big Brother is something that was scary before computers. Once computers came, we start to understand what Big Brother is. It's really helping you feed your customer what that customer wants. The more knowledge I can find about you as a customer, we don't use it to hurt you. We use it to give you a better product.
To me, the audio from the listener player was slightly better than you get from a medium wave station. It sounded great for speech, but the digitized artifacts make it less impressive if you like classical music. Shulov argues that the quality is better than that. But if you invest nearly $200 in one of these players, will users get updates if the technology improves over the coming years?
Well, we consider our quality today FM mono quality. We're not stereo, but we are FM mono quality. And through the little speaker in the player, it's a little tinnier than maybe coming through your car or with headphones. But I'd have to answer that. We think our quality is acceptable today. And, of course, a year or 2 years from now, the future does bring upgrades. But it's really no different than your PDA or your computer. You upgrade technology. And for $199, it really isn't that much. If you were to go out and buy a tape recorder or a digital recorder, you'd probably pay that just for that or something close to that. This is really a digital recorder of the year 2000. It's a Walkman of the year 2000. It's a very powerful audio device.
On the way out of the building, Nathan Schulhoff showed us one of the three servers he's using to store thousands of programs ready for the launch. Each has 9 gigabytes of RAM and 9 terabytes of hard disk space. In practical terms, you can store a lot of audio on something like that. So does Spencer Rees of Wired magazine think the concept will be successful?
Right now we're in this funny period where it's like your appetite is bigger than your ability to put food into your stomach. And we're in a period where we can imagine, or technologists can put together all kinds of interesting concepts like, say, Audio Highway or Ricochet, a lot of wireless things. The dividing line between too early and right on time is unknowable. Do I think that down the line, 5 years from now, there will be ubiquitous wireless radio pushed out at you? Absolutely. Do I think you'll be able to download the latest hit Michael Jackson record? Absolutely. Could you make either of those things happen right in 1997 and make money doing it? I don't know.
Spencer Rees. And if you'd like to see what we've been talking about so far, we've posted some pictures on the Radio Netherlands worldwide website. So check out the Media Network page at the usual address, www.rnw.nl. Once again, www.rnw.nl.
Listeners, at this junction in the narrative, I'm going to interrupt with a legal station identification. You're listening to a Media Network Summer Safari originating from Silicon Valley, USA, through Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Now, let's see if we can build a satellite link the other way around to involve Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook, who's sitting in the editorial office in Amsterdam.
Well, Andy, what have you got for us over there?
Well, first, I've got details of a new schedule for Radio Argentina al Exterior in Buenos Aires. Now, some transmissions have changed times, so here's the rundown. Portuguese and Japanese swapped times on 11710 kHz, so it's now 10 to 11 hours UTC in Portuguese and 11 to 12 hours in Japanese. That's on 11710. The 1800 UTC Spanish transmission moves to 22 hours and means new timings for the French and German services. So the new lineup on 15345 kHz, 15345, is 1800 UTC French, 1900 English, 2000 Italian, 2100 German, and 2200 Spanish. And thanks to Gabriel Ivan Barrera for the email.
Well, I know from past experience that those broadcasts are quite difficult to hear in Europe, and also here in North America.
And on the new media side, I believe Radio Argentina al Exterior has a website, doesn't it?
Yes, they have, but unfortunately they don't seem to be updating it. And when I checked a couple of weeks back, I was still greeted by a message that said, Feliz Navidad.
That's not too long, though. A faithful listener, Frederick Olin in Japan, asked, whatever happened to this station?
This is the Investment Channel. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
but no longer on the air. We reported in May that the station decided that Africa was not the best target area for a financial service via shortwave. But Media Network contributor Harold Kuhl in Germany was approached by the investment channel Sales Limited, seemingly now based in the Bahamas instead of Atlanta, Georgia in the USA. They still claim to be one of the world's most powerful media distributors, and when fully implemented, they say, the investment channel will broadcast to 50 million homes and over 100 countries, this time using satellite distribution rather than shortwave. It remains to be seen whether their new plans will be more successful than the shortwave venture.
No website for the investment channel, but, Andy, there are other new ventures.
Oh, yes, certainly, and one of particular interest to me is the official website of Radio Caroline. By official, I mean it's approved and recognised by Caroline's founder, Ronan O'Reilly. The site has lots of historical information about this British offshore station, which started back in 1964, as well as information about recent developments and future plans. There's also an extensive online catalogue of videos, CDs, tapes and other souvenirs, plus some audio samples for those of you who never heard the station live. And the URL for this very interesting site is www.radiocaroline.com. .co.uk.
And speaking of offshore radio, we've a special programme planned for August the 14th, which is the 30th anniversary of the closure of most of the British-owned offshore stations in the North Sea. The date happens to fall on a Thursday, so we're preparing a special edition of the programme, together with offshore radio specialist Hans Knott, who will investigate why there's still so much interest in these stations that closed down 30 years ago.
Indeed, with this nostalgia wave fade in an era of the internet, where, in theory, a lot of people can be their own broadcaster in the comfort of their living room. We'll also be telling you of more places on the web where you can indulge in offshore radio nostalgia. But back to the present and more brand new websites. Andy.
Yes, Radio Slovakia International has had a website for quite some time now, but its parent organisation, Slovak Radio, is only just starting one. The URL is www.slovakradio.sk, and there is a page for Radio Slovakia International. However, at the moment it's not yet complete, so RSI's existing website, which is on a server here in the Netherlands, can't be phased out just yet. And in South Africa, welcome back to Radio Bop, in what used to be the black homeland of Bophuthatswana. The Bop now refers to the music, and the station says it's getting good audience ratings on its medium wave frequency of 540 kHz, 540, and its FM relays. And to learn more about the relaunched Radio Bop, point your browser at www.bop.co.za.
Well, Radio Netherlands recently completed a report into radio on the internet as part of a project with other members of the European Broadcasting Union. There are now over 3,000 radio stations active on the web, and some are sounding better because a recent upgrade was launched in June to the Real Audio player.
Yes, indeed they have, and in fact it's not called Real Audio anymore because it also handles video, so it's now named Real Player. The final release version of Real Player 4.0 came out very recently, and I've just installed the Windows 95 version. I must say the quality has improved remarkably from earlier versions. I tested it with a recording of last week's Media Network from the Sound Store at the World Radio Network website. And while it wasn't exactly studio quality, the 28.8K version sounded pretty good to me. It automatically configures itself as a plugin for Netscape Navigator and Microsoft Internet Explorer, and it'll also remove any older versions of the player it finds on your system. I wish some far more expensive software was as well behaved as that.
Thanks, Andy. Strange to be talking to you from the other side of the world. That Real Audio player, though, is still free. If you want more information, the URL is www.real.com.
Next week, more from us here on the west coast of North America as we continue our summer safari, looking at trends in technology through European eyes.
In the meantime, on behalf of the team around the world and roadshow manager Jonathan Gruber,
have a pleasant weekend.
Media Network Summer Safari is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Part 2 follows in 7 days, so no excuses, be there. Oh, and don't forget the Silicon Scrapbook on the World Wide Web. Even if the center. Never.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.